everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the copium head.
Okay. Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobby, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. What's up this time?
Well, this time we're discussing humor. In role-playing games.
How to be funny.
Yes.
A comprehensive guide.
You can totally die laughing during a role-playing game, but also sometimes the jokes don't land. Why is? So we're going to start off by talking about professional role-playing games, because those are funny, and like there's been a huge market in Dimension 20, the big one, Critical Role. Yeah, so those have kind of taken off, and those are all hilarious. And then we're going to talk about the space for humor in amateur role-playing games.
Which is home games. That's the kind you play.
Even though we have a podcast about it, I wouldn't call us professionals.
No, we got to get paid first.
And then we talk about game systems that are specifically meant to be silly. And then we have a conclusion question mark.
Yeah. We'll we'll build that on the move, I think.
All right. Well, let's get into...
We'll assemble that plane in flight.
Professional role-playing games.
Yeah. So, Dane said... They're hugely popular right now. There's not that many that are, I don't know, like, what would you call it? Like, mainstream? That, like, reach significant size audiences.
Yeah.
Like a real television show. There's only a handful. There are a lot of YouTube channels where people do, you know, record and, you know, podcasts. Podcasts, I guess.
Hey, we have one of those.
There's a fair amount of... like actual play podcasts,
there's a lot more like podcasts and
professional
like
production. Yeah, making it video. A television show, that's fucking hard work. Mm-hmm. And the amount of like work that goes into, you know, like the current seasons of Dimension 20, making that into not only, you know, palatable role playing for a third-party viewer, like us, the audience, but also making it into actual, like, television that's worth watching with your eyeballs and not just listening to, because it is such a medium of imagination. The work that goes into...
Production.
It's television-level production.
Yeah.
To turn that show into something... you know, worth consuming as entertainment.
And we don't get to see all that production work that gets put into it. So, like, you know, even the writing and making characters, like, that, the amount of backstory that characters have and, like, have memorized and, like, you know, incorporate in.
In concert with, you know, the Game Master's stuff for that season, all of that. All of that work, that's not stuff that we do in home games, you know?
Mm-hmm. Because we don't have the time, and, like, the amateur scene is, like, we do it on the weekends or, you know, a weeknight. Like, these people, it's their job to do this, right? So they have a certain level of commitment and take it serious, even though it is for comedy and, like, laughs.
Yeah.
It is a very serious... undertaking, right? In which, you know, the magic of editing kind of makes it seem like that's not the case. And
we probably don't see a good amount of bits that maybe don't land. I don't know, you know, how much stuff gets actually cut before a thing before an episode of one of these shows goes out for the public to view.
Right.
But, like, you know, there's got to be stuff that doesn't land.
And I have a strong suspicion that stuff that doesn't land, or like they start going with one direction, be like, okay, here's our plan.
Yeah.
And then like partway through they're like, you know what actually would be better? is if we like went back
yeah
30 minutes because I have a better idea.
Let's try it again because this will be a better show.
Yeah.
And maybe that's, I don't know if that's in bad faith or not. Like, that's not how you would play a role-playing game at home. That's not how you would play with your friends. That's not how I would run a game. But that's because I don't have an audience,
mm-hmm.
you know? And we're never really going to have much of an audience outside of the podcast listeners for the live play stuff that we do. But even still. Because it's not, it's primary purpose in a home game or even in like the semi, you know, like amateur production level stuff that we do at that level. The primary purpose is not to entertain other people. It's for us to like enjoy the thing and play in the space. And we bother recording it because we think you might enjoy it too. But that's still kind of secondary to like how much fun we want to have while we do it, which is very different from a professional television production of an actual play.
Right. I mean, the difference between watching and playing, right? You know, mm-hmm. and that's all over, you know, television media, sports as well. You know, like everybody in the stand says they could make that shot, you know? They're like, oh, I could shoot better.
How could you?
It's like, well, you can't because otherwise you'd be
on the court. You might actually be down there, dummy.
It's not to
denigrate the skill or the talent of the people involved. You know, if they were like, oh, we played for half an hour and this kind of like isn't going mm-hmm. anywhere, maybe this isn't very entertaining or it's not fun, they have the opportunity, and I don't know if they do this or not, mm-hmm. but they could just back up 30 minutes, cut a bunch of stuff, and be like, all right, we're starting again from here because it's going to be better for the audience. And they have to be talented improv and comedians and role players all at once to be able to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like professional wrestling, right? Like all the shit. And, like, especially when it was younger, you know, you ever get in that fight where it's like, it's fake, it's real, it's fake, it's real. It's like, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
You like it because it's entertaining, and the work that goes into that
mm-hmm.
is a lot of work, and so who gives a shit?
It's, yeah, it might not be a real fight, but it is real entertainment. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it has value in that completely divorced from whether or not they're actually fighting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But professional role-playing games, all of that stuff that we just, like, we don't have access to, and it's for a different audience as opposed to us at home playing, having no audience, or, you know, an audience of just each other.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and, like, that's why it seems like the professionals are always hilarious mm-hmm. and it's always a good time, is because of, you know, all those things that we just talked about.
Yeah. And there's before we move on into the rest of it, we have talked about this sort of media before and just that it is great. It's, you know, it's awesome, the outreach that it's done for the hobby. And, you know, if you enjoy watching it, then that's awesome. You're having a good time. That's what it's there for. But it can create a bit of an unrealistic expectation.
Mm-hmm.
to try and like match up to in your home game. And some people have talked about that specifically in terms of game masters being like, oh, I have to live up to, you know, Matt Mercer and Brendan Lee Mulligan's level of preparation and improvisational skills. And that's one, that's unfair. It's also not true. Your players don't necessarily expect that of you. But I think a similar sort of effect kind of comes into play for players. Players are like, well, I
have to be funny.
I need to be witty. I need to be quick. I need to, you know, make correct decisions. Correct decisions for the party, but also correct decisions for like the maximum amount of entertainment value, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that, just as it is an unfair and unrealistic comparison most of the time to apply to a game master, it does nobody any good to apply that to yourself as a player.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you are not you know, a professional comedian. I mean, maybe you are, but, yeah, you know, in most cases you're not. You're probably just, you know, friends, hanging out with friends, trying to have fun playing a game. And so the expectation and pressure that might be coming from outside a little bit, I just, you know, give yourself permission to let go of that and to... Well, the next bit that we're going to talk
about. And
to
like,
move on to the next bit that we're going to talk
and we're,
about.
Yeah, we're not saying that amateur games are not funny, because they are. Right? So, like, let's talk about the space, you know, for humor in amateur games.
Yeah.
And by amateur, we mean, you know, hobbyists.
Home games. The normal game that most people will participate in.
Right. You guys might be very, very, very good at role-playing.
Mm-hmm.
We're not, you know, saying that you're bad. We're just not doing it for other people's, a wider audience's entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so, well, all over is the space.
Yeah.
Games are funny, and it's an inherently silly kind of hobby.
Yeah.
Which is good, because, you know, it's a nice little, like, release, and, you know, it's fun, and, like, it can be funny, and, like, you know, it helps us deal with all the shit that goes on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, help us cope, if you will.
Cope. From before.
From before.
Hey, that's comedy.
That's comedy right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, you know, think about when you first started this, you know, adventure and role-playing, your very first character. It can be kind of uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And feel kind of weird, and it's like, oh, you know, I'm playing somebody who isn't me, and, like, you know, I'm in a world that isn't mine.
Yeah, especially if it was the first time ever that you were put in a position where you had to, like, you know, act. If you never did, like, a skit in school or something, and even, you know, that, like, I did that. I hated that.
Yeah.
When I was a kid.
Very uncomfortable. Be in high school and have to get up in front of the class.
Unbelievably uncomfortable. I wish I'd bought into it a little bit more, because I think there's a ton to be, like, gained from it, as mm-hmm. far as, you know, personal confidence and, like, flexing the muscles that we use now a lot in pen and paper stuff. You know, but I wasn't theatery at all.
Mm.
It was there. And I, like, brushed up against it sometimes, but I was really made uncomfortable by it. And I feel like role-playing, for a lot of players at the beginning of their time in the hobby, it feels the same way. It's like you're on stage for the first time, being asked
judged.
To, yeah, being asked to perform, and everyone, you know, if they're doing a good job playing along, then, like, you're not really getting in anything from them at first. And that feels terrible. You're like, where's my laugh? Where's my reaction? You know? So you might, you know, force it a little bit. And, you know, we've probably all made a silly character who was silly on purpose,
mm-hmm.
you know, who had a stupid name or had a silly gimmick. In order to, like, you know, subvert that awkwardness and be like, well, I'm gonna,
right,
I'm not gonna treat it seriously.
Yeah, I'm gonna be silly, so, yeah, like, you know,
so you can't make fun of me, I can't be made, right, to feel uncomfortable about this, because
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care, I'm gonna be stupid about
I'm gonna
it.
Be, you know, I don't know, Hank Big Dick or something, I don't know.
Yeah,
I was trying to come up with a funnier name
than Big Dick Hank.
Yeah,
how does that feel like that actually comes from something?
Does it? Eh, it could. But yeah.
Oh, it was Righteous Gemstones. It was Big Dick Mitch.
Oh, yeah, Big Dick Mitch. yes. So, yeah, if you like, go over to the... If you overcorrect on the silliness, right, it's like, oh, I can't, you know, be judged for that, because, like, it's silly and I'm being silly, and, like, anything, you know, stupid that I do, it's because I'm silly.
Yeah.
Right? And it kind of gives you that safety net.
It's because I'm playing a silly little guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing a Muppet in a otherwise serious movie type of thing.
Right, which is totally fine, especially when you're first starting out. If, like, that's how you feel comfortable, then, you know, mm-hmm. definitely go with that, and, you know, you will be more comfortable the longer you do it, the more you practice, you know, build up those muscles.
Yeah.
Flex those muscles, those comedy and improv muscles, not necessarily comedy, right? Because that's kind of our advice that we're getting at this point, is treat it earnestly and, like, don't try to, you know, force it and, like...
Yeah.
You might be uncomfortable at first, but you will get more comfortable.
Yeah.
So, like, if you treat it earnestly, that is much more opportunity for humor to happen. Because, like, if you're lucky enough, as we are, to have the friends that we have, innocent things and just, like, throughout a conversation, like, jokes will just come up. And sometimes they are absolutely hilarious, mm-hmm. and they last for years.
And the situations mm-hmm. that you find yourself in the, you know, imagination of the game, they'll be, you know, they'll be, like, exciting and dangerous and perilous, violent, whatever, but they'll also, like, there will be, like, nuggets of inherent humor in those situations if you just fully commit to them. I was thinking about this episode, yesterday at work before we recorded today. That's how yesterday worked. I was thinking about the Pirates movies, actually. Mm-hmm. So the two kind of goofy comic relief pirates who I don't think are named until the third movie, but their names are Pintle and Rigetti. And anyone who's seen the movies, probably you know who I'm talking about, right? They're funny mm-hmm. the entire time, right? But they're not funny because they, like, you know, look at the camera and be like, oh, here
I'm a pirate. Again.
Yeah. They take seriously what they're doing. They take seriously being a pirate and all the situations that they're in as pirates. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the high stakes of pirate adventure and the amount of, like, how seriously they're bought into what they're doing creates humorous situations around them. And I feel like that's the, you know, that's the thing to grab onto with role-playing. It is, like, probably, and this is probably the thing at the core of this episode, is, like, don't force it, don't try to be that funny.
Just, chances are it will yeah, come.
It will, right? It'll end up funny. If mm-hmm. you take the unserious thing seriously, right? And treat it as if it was real, and, you know, play your character as realistically and accurately as possible, not doing the, like, you know, not doing actions because it was funny. Mm-hmm. Like, I think this would be funny, me, the player, or I think, you know, my friends at the table will find this action funny. Do the serious try-hard thing for your character, and then success, failure, you know, discovering things, a thing not working because of something you couldn't have known type of thing, but you tried your best, or, you know, you did it in earnestness, then, you know, the funny things just, like, naturally kind of happen.
Well, because, yeah, if your group is enjoying the hobby, it's fun to play, which means there will be funny moments. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have to insert those with, like, you know, the motivation of, like, oh, I'm going to do this because I think it's going to be funny. If you're all having a good time, you know, the jokes will come.
Yeah.
And, like, they won't necessarily be something that one person said. It will be, like, or, like, it won't even maybe have to do with the game. It will be, like, you know, a side conversation going on. And then, like, you know, somebody's like, oh, wait, what are we doing? Roll nat 20. And then, you know, that's funny.
Yeah.
Right? You know, they were completely checked out, and they rolled a nat 20 and killed a big bad, and, like, they weren't even paying attention. Mm-hmm. There's your funny.
Different from, you know, trying to force a joke in character.
Right, trying to say a witticism to the big bad.
When you don't have one locked and loaded, and you're like, well, I'm gonna D's nuts this guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in our amateur opinion,
mm-hmm.
forcing it rarely makes something funnier.
Yeah.
And we have down here, like, the card game Apples to Apples versus Cards Against Humanity. I think Apples to Apples was a much funnier and better game than Cards Against Humanity. Because if anyone's not familiar, Apples to Apples is basically the same card game, just like the question cards and answer cards are not, you know, inherent, and they're not trying to be funny or like, you know,
there was like a Cards Against Humanity, especially with the answer cards, the like the setup card sometimes was just kind of plain, but the submission cards, the answer cards, a lot of them are just raunchy for the sake of that.
Big fat load of cum.
Yeah, but raunchy in a vacuum, you know, without setup, a punchline with no setup, the end of a joke with no context before it is just, oh, it's funny because it's raunchy. And that's not all of them. There's other things in there. And there's funny things in Cards Against Humanity. There's funny possibilities, but... Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so, I mean, that's our take on it.
The forcing it.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, all that being said, there are some game systems out there that are specifically, like, humorous, that are made to be joke back to back to back.
Yeah.
Jokes back to back to back. Not one joke. Not one joke over and over and over again. Yeah. Different jokes.
Different jokes, probably. Multiple ones. Hopefully. In the same, all in a row. Sorry, I spaced out a little bit there. Okay, a couple episodes ago, in the temporal game mechanics one episode, we talked about the Monty Python RPG, the Holy Grail sort of medieval fantasy goof around RPG, which we have not played and we don't own a copy of, but I've watched a couple videos about it, and the conclusion on the internet seems to be that it's actually a pretty well written and nuanced take on the formula, the sketch comedy formula of like setup and absurdity that made the Monty Python comedy formula work applied to a role-playing game. I don't totally understand without having played it myself how that works, but it seems like it was written to do that, and you kind of like you move from specific scenes to specific scenes in an order that is designed to kind of ratchet up the absurdity, and in doing so, you know, as a game mechanic, you keep putting oxygen into the funny fire that way. Seems pretty cool. We haven't gotten around to trying it. I don't know. I haven't seen it on a shelf anywhere, but maybe someday we'll get to it and we'll revisit that idea. Something, though, we can speak to more directly is All Out of Bubblegum.
Yes, All Out of Bubblegum, a little one-pager, and it's a very rules-light take on, like, 80s action movies is, like, the basis of the mechanics, right? It's like, you only have like one stat, and that's how much bubblegum you have.
Yeah.
And your rolls, you know, you try to roll over your amount of bubblegum, and then like, you know, you lose bubblegum when you fail, and then like there's two actions. You can do kick an ass and not kick an ass.
Yeah.
And like if you're all out of bubblegum, you can only kick ass.
Right.
So like you can't open a door if you're out of bubblegum. Right. You have to kick that down.
You got to blow that door off the hinges. So as the game goes and your bubblegum goes down, like you start out and it's designed for like one shots and, you know, quick one evening of play, you know, go through a spoof of Die Hard basically, or, you know, Commando or whatever, those type of movies. In the beginning, you have the rolls are like inversely weighted based on how much bubblegum you have. So it's easier to do non-combat stuff.
Right. When you have more bubblegum.
When you have more bubblegum. That's when you think. That's when you solve problems.
You plan.
You know, yeah, you plan the heist, or you, you know, you hack the computer. You interrogate the bad guy for information. Because once your bubblegum starts to run out, you can't do anything else. Except beat people up and shoot guns and cause
break
explosions.
it
does a pretty good job driving the one-shot session from, you know, low action, low stakes planning and information gathering to like a high action climax finish for the session. And there's a lot of just like inherent humor in that. Like, you can't do anything else.
Right. You can't talk to this guy. You have to punch him.
You have a 1 in 10 chance of doing anything else, but you have a 9 in 10 chance of blowing it up. So, you know, which thing are you going to do? And then, yeah, by the end of it, everyone's blowing everything up. You're leaving stuff by the wayside because you can't do that anymore because that's not kicking ass.
Yeah. So, like, games like that are, the mechanics push you towards humor and essentially they force you into it, right? Which is kind of the opposite of what we were talking about. But these games are specifically designed to do that. Which means if you're taking them earnestly, you're still getting more funny out of it because you are letting like the mechanics guide you, and it's all about the experience you want, right? So like All Out of Bubblegum, probably not going to work for every table.
Yeah. You gotta, yeah, you gotta be buying into.
Right, because it leans towards more the absurd. So like, you know, a very serious group who are like, we want to, you know, save the world against evil, you know, in like a grand arcing fantasy world.
Or if you want even just like the laws of physics to behave reasonably. You
know, yeah.
It's probably not going to, but in All Out of Bubblegum, you can jump a car, you know, from one building to another, like a Fast and Furious movie. And that's how you solve the problem is, you know, I'm going to hit him with my car by driving it out the window into another window. It's stupid.
Yeah.
But you know, when you buy into it and treat it like, you know, these are the rules of the universe because that's the universe we're playing in, then a lot of really great and just naturally funny stuff occurs.
And I'm sure there are other game systems out there that do this. These were just the two that were kind of top of mind and we had the most experience with, even though the Holy Grail one we had zero experience with, but we've at least read about it.
I have another one written down, and I don't know, maybe we'll talk about this off air, how much we should talk about things that we haven't actually got our paws on, and we've just like, read a post about or seen videos about, but I watched the Quinn's Quest review for Slug Blaster, which seemed pretty cool. It's a skateboarding RPG where you get like magic, you know, kind of Back to the Future skateboards, and you go into other dimensions and have kid adventures on your special skateboards, which is explicitly like metaphorical for like youth skate culture, counterculture. You know, like the grown-ups don't get it, but this is so important, and this is your found family, and you go through these portals with your skateboards to have adventures. But then you come back, and this is where the like designed humor sort of thing that I thought was interesting. Your downtime, like when you level up between stuff, is you come back to your
real world?
Suburban real world home, and how you deal with like, my high school ex is dating my best friend, and that makes me feel really bad because I'm a teenager, or like my parents are getting a divorce, or my older brother, like he stole all my stuff out of my room.
Stole my weed.
He stole my weed. That sort of, you know. Which is like such low stakes, you know, teenage bullshit compared to the stuff that you were doing on your adventure, but also in real life. Like, it's low stakes, but it also, like, it means
the world.
It means the world. It's like, it's the only thing in your life when you are a teenager like that. So the way that sort of, like high stakes mundanity is gamified as the downtime and like how you kind of upgrade between adventures. It was pretty cool. Mechanics with really humorous writing designed to enforce a certain sort of fantasy. It exists. It's out there.
Yeah, I love a Danny Phantom type premise.
That's
ghosts. I got to go save Ghost World, but I got to take this test.
Yeah. Oh, but if I don't get back in time, I'm going to fail this test and have to go to summer school.
See? It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. It's good. Yeah. So, I don't know. That's another thing that maybe we'll get our hands on at some point. Maybe we'll at least read it. Maybe even play it. But there's so many games out there.
Y'all
should go on the internet and look at all the games that there are, because there's a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot. And we could try a lot more if we were getting paid a little more.
Yeah, if we were getting paid a little more. So maybe let's conclude, and then let's plug for the Patreon.
Yeah, okay. Conclusion, question mark. Yeah, I don't know. Do we build anything?
I mean, I think it's just, like, don't force it. You know, I mean, maybe at first, if that's what you need to be comfortable to start, right, is like, well, I need to make a silly character who's, you know, Big Dick Hank or whatever, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And I need to just have that and say these silly things so that I feel comfortable participating at the table. Okay. It's probably not the best, but you will also...
It opens the door.
Yeah, you'll open the door and you'll gain confidence. You play some more sessions, and, you know, by the time your second campaign begins, you're probably not going to be doing a gimmick character anymore. You might have a gimmick, but your next character is going to be better.
Yeah, okay. I think maybe I would refine that and be like, one of our points of the conclusion is do what makes you comfortable.
Yeah.
Especially starting out. Mm. But as you gain more confidence and become more comfortable, maybe...
Continue to push that?
And get off the crutch of absurdity and silliness.
Right.
Because that will come naturally later. So, like...
Yeah, then you'll take the step from forcing, you know, a dick joke to just like, all right, I'm going to take it seriously. And in taking it seriously, as long as you... You know, if you treat the world like it's real and you play your character like they have real stakes in it, whether it be, you know, a ridiculous, you know, action movie parody in an all out of bubblegum, or, you know, you're playing like a, you know, a 2-year D&D campaign and, you know, taking that as seriously as the world, you know, is meant to be taken, the funny stuff will start to happen.
Right. Because, well, I don't know if this is any good. I'll throw it out here, though. But, like, somewhere along that path, your stop, like, as a player trying to use your character to dunk on other players, but have your character dunk on other characters.
Yeah, okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah, Does that track?
And, yeah, then you might be able to thread the gap. I think, like, the last time I played a gimmick character was the, like, animatronic pirate in,
Pina Coladaberg.
Yeah, in Alex's Pina Coladaberg. And that was a pretty inherently silly idea. But I was also thinking about it in the context of, like, you know, post-apocalyptic pirate Florida. And so a robot from, like, a pirate Chuck E. Cheese who now just, like, you know, the world is real to him now. I feel like that worked pretty well. I haven't had a chance to come back to that, but my point is, like, eventually you'll get to a point where you'll come full circle and you can, like, really thread the needle with a goof character.
Right, instead of making something, or instead of ending, having the punchline do the joke, you craft the whole joke.
Yeah.
Right, like in Cards Against Humanity, instead of just putting down a funny, you know, answer card, your answer card goes with the question or something like that.
Or there's, like, you know, there's silly, like, character, like, prompt generators, which are just the setup with no punchline, essentially, where it's like, oh, you know, he's a orc, but instead of being a buff, you know, fighter, like, he's a miserable nerd, and that's funny because he's an orc, and that's all it is, type of thing. That character could be really great, but not until you come back around and...
Yeah. Right, like, I guess just how you play it.
Right. Yeah, I guess. Yeah, we're mumbling a little bit now.
Yeah, well, okay, so, you know, threading the line on that, that's something that the professionals do really well, right? Because, one, they've had a lot of practice. Two, they're getting paid. And, you know, mm-hmm. they are professionals for a reason. You know, they hone these skills over yeah. a lifetime, over a career, right? So it's not a bad thing if you can't match, like, Matt Mercer's game mastering skills, mm-hmm. right? That's okay. Matt Mercer is Matt Mercer. And, like, trying to emulate is not a bad thing either.
No.
Right? You know, and so, like, try to get better, sure.
Yeah.
But, like, don't beat yourself up and don't, like, you know, really try to force it. And then, like, you know, I can see it leading to, like, you know, over prepping and then, like, oh, my players, I had this whole thing prepped and my players don't want to do that, so I'm going to force it on them. And then, like, you know, kind of, you know, butts up against each other and, like, you know, doesn't necessarily ruin it, but kind of brings the fun all the way down mm-hmm. or something, I guess. I don't know. So, yeah, professional role-playing, it's great. It's got the audience, or it's reached a greater audience, which is good for the hobby because yeah. we got a bunch of new people in there. New people are coming up with games, and, like, I was looking the other day at, like, Tunnel Goons hacks. There's this, like, great Google list of just, like, shitload of, you know, people who are like, you know what? I like Tunnel Goons. Here's my take on it. Yeah. Like, here's an but Old West version. And, like,
yeah.
you know, all this crazy shit. And it's great. Right? So, yeah. Professional role-playing. It's hilarious. It's entertaining. It's different than amateur role-playing.
It's not... You know, you are not making a you're not making a television show for an audience of thousands of people when you sit down to play at home. So, yeah, maybe just keep that scope in mind.
Right. Take the pressure off
yourself. Who are you making a joke for?
Right. Yeah.
You know, if it's not for the people that you're playing with,
probably shouldn't be making the joke.
Yeah. That's pretty good. There's maybe a nugget there. That's a good nugget.
Should we put that on the board?
Let's put that on the board. Yeah. Think about your audience. If you're not on Dimension 20 or Critical Role, you probably aren't playing for much of an audience. You're probably not playing for any audience. You're just playing for each other, right?
You're playing for each other.
So, yeah, think about that audience and think about, like, who is this joke for? And if it's not for the audience, then... I don't know.
Then why?
Yeah, wait till you have a better one.
Yeah. All right. I think that will be a great place to end it because
that's a good
I feel
conclusion.
Solid. If we go any longer, we're probably just going to lose.
We'll say something dumb.
Yeah, we'll say something dumb.
If we keep talking.
And then people will laugh at us.
Yeah. So that'll do it for this episode of Two-Headed Game Master. Thank you for joining us. If you like our stuff, head on over to 2hgm.com where you will find some stuff.
Like, first thing will pop up, a little banner ad for Afterlife, mm-hmm. our own fantasy post-apocalyptic role-playing game. There's a nice little print book you can get at drivethroughrpg.com. If you buy the print book, you get the PDF version for free, mm-hmm. so that way you can have, you know, a nice physical copy, but you can also, you know, send your PDF to the players and, yep. you know, have everybody get it in their hands. Also, on 2hgm.com, there's a bunch of other stuff that we talk about all the time. But Patreon is the big one.
Yep.
Support us on Patreon. You get access to our Discord server.
Yep. On the Discord, I mean, we just talk about RPG stuff on there sometimes, but also that's where we schedule and announce things, you know, ahead of time outside of the regular podcast, like... certain actual play
events live broadcasts that we're going to be doing.
We live broadcast at the very least every year we do our Halloween special. If this show falls apart and we're not doing it anymore, we'll still at the very least once a year do a Halloween actual play. Even if we don't do anything else, I think. And the fun thing is, if you're a Patreon, you get to listen to that as it's happening. Heckle us in the chat, make suggestions with the Game Master and, like, help out creating it with input. Mm-hmm. Input on the creation of the one-shot for the Halloween Spooktacular special. It's also, if you got an episode that you want us to do,
yeah.
or if you want to be on an episode, that's the way to do it. doesn't cost very much, and if, you know, if someone comes to us on the Discord and is like, hey, what about this? Well, we're going to talk about it. And if we haven't expressly done that episode already, yeah, we'll probably make an episode out of it.
Probably make an episode, and you might even be on it.
Mm-hmm. No reason why not.
Yeah, real quick recommendation, Dimension 20. It's on Dropout TV.
Getting into it.
It's pretty good.
It is. Dropout is also just...
And Dropout is fun. All the shows on there are hilarious and great.
And it's a... Like... It is a...
Community.
It's a thing worth supporting. Okay. They treat their people really well. They pay their people really well. And... they also, like, they don't charge us very much. All the money goes to the staff and to the performers. And terrific entertainment value for $6 a month. I'm enjoying it.
Maybe they're pay for an ad spot. We do love it. All right, that's our recommendation. Go get yourself a Dropout TV subscription.
Having a great time on there right now. The Dimension 20 stuff's really inspiring if you're a game master, mm-hmm. I think, to see all the prep and work that they've done and, you know, put it together. Sometimes it makes me feel bad because, we don't have the same,
all the stuff we talked about today, right?
Sometimes it makes me feel bad a little bit, but also it makes me want to, like, yeah, I want to create at this level. And there's nothing really stopping me except doing it. So... Anyway, thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pond Hill is Finest as the intro and outro to our show. And we'll see y'all next time.
See you next time.